Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Shabbos Kodesh Class Learning. Thank you so much for taking the time to come join us this morning to be inspired by Divrei Torah regarding Shabbos. So I have a special shiur prepared with a new piece that I came across in my shiur preparation actually last week that totally relates to the topic of Shabbos Kodesh. It's a beautiful piece by Rebelsky Zatzal. So that is what we will be discussing today. It's related to these parshios of Shmos and Ve'era, and understanding our enhancement and appreciation of Shabbos. So with your permission, I would like to dedicate this class to the Aliyah Neshama of my husband's paternal grandmother. Her yahrzeit is today, 27 Teves. It's actually her 20th yahrzeit today, 27 Teves. Chana Malka Bas Naftali, Allah HaShalom. May the Neshama have an Aliyah in the Schus of the Torah that we will share. She should be a Melitza Yoshar for the whole family. For only Simchas and Besoros Tovos and good health to enjoy. This is my husband's paternal grandmother. So her 20th yahrzeit is today. So let us get started in our Shabbos Kodesh class learning. The pasuk tells us in the beginning of Parshas Shmos, Sefer Shmos, the very first pasuk of the parsha tells us the Elish Shmos Bnei Yisrael by Mitzrayim Eis Yaakov Ishu Veso Ba'u. These are the names of the children of Israel. It's translated as who came to Egypt. Yaakov, each man in his household came, and then it lists the names of the Shvatim. It tells us that Yosef was in Egypt. It tells us that whole generation died, and the Shibur Mitzrayim began. But the literal translation of the Elish Shmos Bnei Yisrael Ba'u Mitzrayim is not these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt, but rather these are the names of the children of Israel who are coming to Egypt. It's said in the present tense. These are the names of the children of Israel who are coming to Egypt. So what does that mean? They've been there for hundreds of years. They're not just coming to Egypt. If you say, I'm coming home, it means I'm coming right now. If you've been there for 5 hours, you don't say, I'm coming home. You say, I already came home. So what does it mean? It can literally be translated as these are the names of the children of Israel who are right now currently coming to Egypt. So I begin by quoting a short piece by Rav Salvechik, a couple of sentences, and then we're going to go into Rav Belsky, much longer essay. So Rav Salvechik quotes a beautiful medrash, Yalkut Shimoni, that the medrash tells us that many Jews in Egypt had scrolls. They had some kind of scroll, probably, says Rav Salvechik, consisting of Bereishis, and every Shabbos they would read these scrolls. So the medrash says in Egypt they had some sort of text, a scroll, and they would take out the scrolls on Shabbos, and they would read from these scrolls. The Rav says that they were probably consisted of Sefer Bereishis. And so the redemption did not start with Moshe. We tend to think that the Geula began when Moshe came on the scene. No, as Rav Salvechik, the Jewish belief in the promise of redemption, so they always had, they said, Avi Shabbos in a sense, Ani Mami, Be'emunah Shleimah, Bevias HaMashiach. The belief in the promise of redemption was nurtured by the reading of these scrolls every Shabbos. The scrolls helped them maintain their unique identity. It helped them stay different. It helped them stay separate. It helped them remember that the Geula would be coming. When they reaffirmed their belief in the promise of redemption, when they took out these scrolls and read them every Shabbos, and therefore, Elish Shmos Bnei Yisrael by Mitzrayim, the Bnei Yisrael considered themselves as if they had just entered Egypt. No matter how long they were there for, they felt as if they had just come, or just coming out, because they maintained their identity. They stayed separate and distinct. It's as if they were just coming. How did they stay separate and distinct? By the beauty and aura of Shabbos, on which they took out these scrolls, which reaffirmed the promise in the redemption. How? Because what were the last psukim of Sefer Bereishis? The very last psukim in Parshas Vayechi, when Yosef reminds the brothers that the Geula will come, Hashem will surely remember you, and the Geula will come, and therefore this nurtured their hope and the promise of redemption. One moment, please. Yes. Okay, so go past and get what you need. I have to close the camera for 1 second.
Thanks.
Sorry, one of my sons is zooming this week, his school went remote. So as you could see, it's a little bit musical chairs. Okay, so now I go to a beautiful piece that last week when I was preparing for my stream, I came across and I marked it with a little sticky. It's sitting on my desk since last week. My little sticky says on top, SK, which stands for Shabbos Kodesh Class. Okay, so when Moshe comes to Paro and he asks Paro to free the Jews, one of the things that he tells him is, I'm going to quote from the Chumash, okay, even though Rebelsky has it down here. So one of the things, it's from the Sefer Eini Yisrael on Sefer Shmos, because Rav Yisrael Belsky Eini Yisrael. Okay, so Moshe says to Paro, okay, Derach, this is Perachas, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Again, I should close the camera. Do you have everything you need from here? Okay, 1 minute, please. Close the door, please. Okay, sorry. Okay, so Parachas Pasuk Chav Gimel, Moshe says to Paro, Derech Shloshes Yamim Neilech, it's this week's Parashas, Parashas Ve'ira. Don't worry, it's not Parashas Shir, it's Shabbos. Derech Shloshes Yamim, not it's Shabbos, if anyone's hearing this, I'm recording. It's our Shabbos Kodesh Inside Shir. Derech Shloshes Yamim Neilech Bamidbar, Moshe says to Paro, we want to go for 3 days in the desert. V'zavachnu l'Hashem Elokeinu, we will offer sacrifices to Hashem our God, kasher yomer aleinu, like he will say to us. So Paro doesn't want this. So when Moshe comes, Rebelski is going to address, when Moshe comes, he doesn't say anything about actually leaving. So now I'm going into Rebelski. Actually, I'm going to screen so you could see the psukim that he wants to refer to. Here we go. Okay. 1 second, please. Okay, yesterday apparently one share was screen sharing the wrong thing. I didn't realize. Can you see that I switched to Shemos on my screen? Yes, thank you very much. Here we go. This is the beginning of Parshas Ve'era. So Rebelski says right here in the beginning of Ve'era, Paragvav Pasuk Beis. At the beginning of this week's Parsha, Hashem reveals to Moshe Rabbeinu the stages of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the ultimate destination being Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe to make this plan known to the Bnei Yisrael, and now Rebelski quotes this passage from the beginning of the Parsha. Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says to them, V'gam ani shamati asnakas Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Mitzrayim avidim osam, v'ezkeres brisi, and I have also heard the groans of the children of Israel, that the Egyptians are enslaving them, and I remember my covenant. And now we come to what's known as the Arba Lashonos Geula. Lachain, therefore, or more Levnei Yisrael, say to the Bnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem, I'm Hashem, Votseisi, number one, Votseisi Eschem Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim, and I will take you out, I will free you from under the burden of Egypt, V'Hitzalti Eschem, Lashon Geula, number two, V'Hitzalti is the second one, and I will save them from the work, V'Ga'alti Eschem, I will redeem you, Bizranu, to you with an outstretched arm, b'shvatim v'gadolim, and with great judgment. So in Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav, we have three of the Arba Lashonos Geula, the V'hotzeisi, the V'hitzalti, v'ga'alti. Let me come to Pasuk Zayin, v'lakachti eschem li la'am, that's refers to Matan Torah, Har Sinai, which is coming up in Parshas Yisro. I will take you to me as a nation, v'hayisi lachem l'elokim, I will be to you a God, v'yadatim k'ini Hashem, you will know that I'm the Lord, Elokeichem, your God, amotzi eschem mitachos sivlos Mitzrayim. And then you have the fifth law of Geula as well. The process is not meant to end by the Arba Lashonos Geula. Of course, we inverted the process. We rejected the land, so Hashem didn't bring us to the land, and so the Koshal Eliyahu is the fifth cup, because we're still waiting for Eliyahu and Navi to announce that so we are waiting for the day when the Redeemer will come and take us all back to Eretz Yisrael with true Geulas. Therefore, we're not allowed to partake of the fifth cup. We reserve a failure Navi. But the original plan was supposed to be that generation, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, were supposed to be the Ba'i Eretz, the same ones who left, are going to go into the land. And the ultimate fifth stage was, so after the V'hotzeisi, I take you out. V'hitzalti, I save you. V'ga'alti, I redeem you. V'lakachti, eschem li la'am, we come to Har Sinai and we get the Torah. After Matan Torah was supposed to be not desert wandering for 40 years, Behevesi Eschem El Aretz, Asher Nosasias Yadila Seso Sola Avram Letokol Yaakov, and I will bring you to the land that I have raised my hand, meaning I took an oath to give this land to Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, and Asati Osa Lechem Marasha Ani Hashem, I will give it to you as a heritage, a Marasha, only two things, of course, and the whole Chamishachem Shetar are known as Marasha. One is Aretz Yisrael, and the other is Torah, as in Varam Lamed Gimel Pasuk Dalet Torah Tzivulanu Moshe Morasha Kilis Yaakov. Both Eretz Yisrael and the Torah are our Morasha. They are our heritage. They are entrusted to each of us in each generation, these tremendous gifts, and we have an achrayus to pass them on to the next generation as we receive them, Torah and Eretz Yisrael. So now that you see the Pesukim, so Rebelski says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to make this plan known to the Bnei Yisrael. And it is that we're going to Eretz Yisrael as the ultimate destination. However, says Rebelski, throughout the remainder of the Parsha, however, this week's Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about a seemingly temporary excursion to the desert. in order to celebrate a festival. When you look at the Pesukim, he doesn't say to Paro, you know, I'm taking these people out and we're never going to see you again. When he comes to Paro, what he says is, I want a temporary excursion in the desert. So we want a three-day break. We want a three-day vacation. Then after the three-day vacation, after this preparation, we'll see what's going to happen. But he doesn't speak about a long-term plan, especially even before these Arba Lashonos Geula. It's interestingly, when you Moshe first appears to Paro in Parakeya Bereshis, he says, Elokeha Ivrim Nikra Elenu, the God of the Hebrews appeared to us in the beginning of Parakeya, Ne'elcha Naderach Shloshas Yamim Bamidbar, K'minizbech HaLashem Elkeinu. So the whole time Moshe is speaking about these 3 days that we're going to have a Yantef, a Chag LaHashem in the desert. Throughout the remainder of the parasha, says Rabelski Zetzal, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks only about a seemingly temporary excursion to the desert in order to celebrate a festival. Even when Moshe Rabbeinu demands that Paro allow the Bnei Yisrael to leave Egypt, he did not mention it's to be a permanent arrangement. He merely said, we shall travel 3 day journey into the wilderness. We will slaughter Tashem our God in a manner that he shall tell us. So what is going on here? So Belsky says there are two ways to understand why Moshe Rabbeinu drew attention only to the festival in the wilderness and not to the greater objective of the Jewish people's ultimate emancipation. He keeps talking about, and Rabelski specifically referencing one of the Pesukim in this week's Parsha and Parachas. However, I already quoted from the beginning of Parakei Pasuk Gimel, where you see the same idea. Darach Shloshas Yamim Neilech Bamidbar V'Zavachnu LaHashem Elokeinu. Okay, so continuing with Rabelski, now we start to understand the explanation, and you're going to see how this is totally related to our preparation for observance and celebration of the weekly Shabbos. From this question and these psukim, Rabelski derives an entire lesson into Shabbos Kodesh. As we have mentioned, he says, Bnei Yisrael were not ready to digest the full implication of total freedom from slavery, which is a very interesting idea, that they were not perhaps psychologically, emotionally ready to absorb the idea of complete emancipation. They had been there not for 6 years, for hundreds of years. We learn from the age of Levi, Rashi derives from the age of Levi in last week's Parsha, how long we were in Egypt and how many years they were slaves. They were in Egypt for a total of 210 years, Gematria Redu, but they were slaves for 116 years. So it's really impossible, like I think literally impossible for us to fathom exactly what that means. It was a terrible time of over a century. And they thought that this is how it has to be. This is how my father was, my grandfather was, and my great-grandfather. This is how I will be and my children will be. 116 years. Even as I say the words, I don't have a concept of really what that means. So Rabelski says, Bnei Yisrael were not ready to digest the full impact of total freedom from slavery. The idea of a festival, however, or a few days in the desert, 3 days, this is something they were able to comprehend. Indeed, not only is it something that they were able to comprehend, it would bring them a respite from the back-breaking labor, 3 days vacation, a 3 day break, and it would give them a taste of the joy of Avodas Hashem. From this starting point, the full realization of complete freedom would be easier for them to grasp. So if they took a 3 day break from the Avodas Parach, the back-breaking futile labor, then they would be able to grasp the more long-term idea of freedom once they tasted a little bit of freedom. I heard something so interesting from Rabbi Zev Leff in a shir on a fasuk on Sunday. He said the most interesting thing about Avodas Parach, and he said a beautiful chiddush as well that I never really thought of or considered. What the Egyptians did to the Israelite slaves was make them work for nothing. It was futile labor. It was purposeless labor. It was to demean them. Like we know that they made the men do women's labor and women do men's labor. They just wanted to demean them. He quoted an interesting medrash, which I never heard before. Vayivin arei miskenos, the paros piso and ves ramses. Don't read it miskenos, read it miskenos. Like in the modern day Ivrit, like a nebuch, oh, is a miskena. You're such a, like, I don't know the right word. Like, oh, nebuch, you're so poor girl. Doesn't mean monetarily poor. So vayivin arei miskenos, the paros. The Medrash says, Al tikri miskenos el miskenos. The Egyptians just made them do backbreaking, pointless labor. Every day they would build the pyramid and they would come back, the building, whatever it was, and it would sink into the quicksand. And the next day they would come and they build and they would go into the quicksand. And they would build and the building would go into the quicksand. It was futile, purposeless labor. And he said, the proof of this is extremely interesting. The proof of this is the fact that when Paro wanted to increase the labor, tichbar ha'avoda al ha'nashim, val yushu b'divrei shakar. What did he say? No more straw. You're not getting straw, perkei, but you still have to meet the quota of bricks. So the Jews are working doubly hard to produce the same amount. If Paro really wanted them to work doubly hard, to produce double the amount, he would have provided them with straw and said, produce double the quota of bricks. The fact that he kept the quota of bricks the same but made the people work doubly hard proves that he wasn't interested in their labor. He was interested in enslaving them with avodas parach, futile, purposeless labor. So you're working doubly hard, but you're producing the same. If he really wanted to maximize the slave labor, he should have given them straw. I made them produce double the quota of bricks. That would have benefited him. And he told the mashal, which Rabbi Dr. Abram J. Twersky, Zichron Avracha, also brings down in some of his farm, a person who was imprisoned by the Russian gulag for 10 years for, treason against the state. And in his prison cell, he has a wheel. And they tell him, you must turn the wheel for 8 hours a day, and on the other side of the wall is a mill, you're grinding wheat. And after 10 years, his sentence is up, and he comes out, and he's allowed to go home, and he says to the prison guards, before I leave, I just want to see where the other side of the wall, I want to see the mill and the wheat that I was grinding. And they started laughing, and they said, you fool, there was nothing on the other side of the wall, you were turning the wheel for no purpose. Havel, havelim, hakol, havel. So one version, Rabbi Zev Lef said that the man said, the other version is at this point the man died. So the man said, according to Rabbi Lef, this was harder for me than all the 10 years in prison, to find out that for 8 hours a day I was actually doing nothing. Another version of the story is the man at this point died because he could handle working for 8 hours a day knowing he was grinding wheat, but he couldn't handle knowing he was doing nothing. So that's just a comment on the respite from backbreaking labor. Give them a taste of joy. Vavodas Hashem. Rabbi Lef said something funny. If you want to smile, I was smiling when I listened to this. He said, sometimes you look at a housewife's work and you wonder, is this avodas parach? She washes the clothing, but 5 minutes later she puts it on the kid and it's dirty again. Just like the buildings. They built the buildings and it disappeared into the ground. They built the buildings, it disappeared into the ground. They built the building, disappeared in the ground. He said, she works hard to do the laundry and then 5 minutes later she puts on her toddler and it's dirty again. She cleans up the toys. They come home from school. It looks like she never cleaned up the toys. She cooks a meal, spends so long cooking the meal. The food is imbibed and then doesn't look like anything there. He said he used to go to work when his children were younger and he would come home at the end of the day, the house looked like it looked in the morning. So his wife said, you don't understand, I spent the whole day cleaning up and the kids came home from school. So he had a zaravodas parach. So he said, chas v'sham, he said a woman has to know her goal. That's not her goal. Her goal isn't to clean the toys and do the laundry and cook the food. Her goal is to build a Jewish home. This is part of the process of building a Jewish home. Okay, going back to Rabelsky, okay, so if they took a 3-day respite in the desert from the avodas parach, and we have just explain what avodas parach means according to Rabbi Lef's interpretation, they would be able to grasp freedom. As Bnei Yisrael stood at Yamsuf in Parshas Bishalach, the shackles of Egypt have been broken. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, Ki asher re'isem es Mitzrayim hayom lo tosifu l'roshem od ad olam. You'll never see the Egyptians again. Once they left Egypt, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to reveal the full truth. So they left Egypt thinking for a temporary respite. But once they saw how nice it was not to be involved in backbreaking labor, Moshe was able to say to them, we're really going forward. We're really going further. This isn't actually for 3 days. And he was able to reveal the full truth. Not only would they never see Mitzrayim again, but they would have no desire to do so. Because once they tasted freedom, they were capable of considering a state of permanent emancipation. Unfortunately, isn't there, what's it called, Stockholm Syndrome? There's some kind of, I think that's what it might be called, where the prisoner begins to associate with the tormentor and the captor, and they can't conceptualize of the lack of fairness or the difficulty of their situation. So Rabelsky is explaining something interesting. They needed the 3 days to allow them to mentally adjust to this concept of full freedom. Unfortunately, says Rabelsky, we know that there was reluctance amongst some Jews to accept the permanence of their freedom from Egypt. Throughout the 40 years of wandering in the desert, repeatedly, there are numerous complaints against Moshe Rabbeinu, even to the extent that they say, Nitna Rosh V'Nashuva Mitzrayima. After the Chayr HaMiragim, they say, that's a point ahead, and let's go back to Egypt. He quotes a different pasuk. Ki tov lanu avodes Mitzrayim Yimimusein B'Midbar. You know what? It was just better. We just should have stayed there. What do we need all these problems in the desert for? These were symptoms of a certain kotzer ruach, When Moshe Rabbeinu comes with these Chamesh Lashonos Geula, which I took off the screen, the very next pasuk tells us, Paragvav pasuk tes, V'lo Shamu al Moshe Mikotzer Ruach Me'avoda Kasha. That Kotzer Ruach, that shortness of spirits, as Rebelsky, remained with them throughout a time in the desert. There was a certain population, that whole male first generation, it was a symptom of a certain kotzer ruach. It was, quote, a small-mindedness that persisted for many years. However, the majority of people realized the gift of greatness, of freedom, and they were ready to embrace it wholeheartedly. Certainly, by the way, the women were ready to embrace it wholeheartedly. The women, all the Yotzei Mitzrayim, became the Ba'i Aretz. We also know Bizchus Nashim Tzidkanius, but also Ador Negali Yisrael Mitzrayim. So it's interesting to consider that the woman, who, if you don't understand her job, you might think she's doing Avodas Perach, but Chas V'Sham, you understand that she is building the base Yisrael. The woman is the base Yaakov. She understands a much larger purpose to her work, and she was able to conceptualize of what true freedom meant. So now, going back to Rebelsky, we see that this Chag Hashem that Moshe spoke about, this festival to God, is a stepping stone to complete Chirus. You need to come to this Chag Hashem of 3 days, and you use that as a stepping stone to complete Chirus. They couldn't go from being slaves on the 49th level to being absolutely free on the 50th level of purity. They needed this 3 days, which served as a stepping stone for help them grasp the concept of full Chirus freedom. What does this all have to do with our class? Here we go. Says Rebelsky, this is the Sefer Eine Yisrael Shemos. I'm on page 67, if you want to go look it up. It is also true that a Chag LaHashem has an intrinsic value and Kedusha in and of itself, which is no less significant than its capacity to attune and enslave people to Chirus. So not only is this Chag LaHashem concept a stepping stone to something better, but it is also in and of itself something of intrinsic value and holiness and Kedusha. And the intrinsic value of the Chag LaHashem and the Kedusha is no less significant than the capacity to be used as a stepping stone to something greater. Quote, when Shabbos or Yom Tov comes around, it is a chance to immerse ourselves in total Kedusha, to bask in the closeness we are privileged to have with our Father in heaven. Direct quote. Interestingly, he brings up a concept that I've never seen or considered before. There are many parallels that can be made between the Bnei Yisrael's preparation prior to their journey to have their Chag LaHashem and the preparation the Jewish family makes for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So they were preparing for a 3-day Yom Tov, what they thought they were preparing for a 3-day Yom Tov, which ends up being a stepping stone to something much greater, which is supposed to be Ve'hevesi Aschem El Ha'aretz, Asher Nasasi Asyadila Seisoso. However, the 3-day, the Chag LaHashem in and of itself should not only be seen as a stepping stone, it also has intrinsic value and intrinsic Kedusha because it is an opportunity and a time to come closer to Ribbono Shel Olam. So you may look at Shabbos as a base, a foundation, a respite from the whole week to prepare you for the week ahead. While that might be true because you have the break on Shabbos from the rat race of the previous week to prepare for the coming week, however, there's something much greater to Shabbos, which is that in and of itself, it has intrinsic value and intrinsic Kedusha, which is no less significant than the fact that it's also a preparation for the week ahead. There are many parallels, says Rebelsky Zatzal, between the preparation of the Bnei Yisrael that they made as they were leaving Egypt to this 3-day break and our preparation for Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, says Rebelsky, we take out our beautiful silverware. We adorn the Shabbos table. We dress in our finest clothing. The women wear their valuable jewelry. So this is something that we've spoken about many times in this class. And it's important for us, even if there's no company and there's no one else in the home, we're not adorning the table with beautiful silverware and Shabbos table for the company. It's for Shabbos. You don't dress in your finest clothing for the company. You dress in your finest clothing to be Mekabi the Shabbos. Women wear their valuable jewelry. But you could say, oh, I'm not going to a chasna. I'm not going to an event. I don't have anyone at the table. It's not for anybody else. And by the way, you are going to a chasana. Bowie kala. It's for Shabbos itself that you take out your valuable jewelry. This is all from Rebelsky. Bnei Yisrael were also instructed to do this. Very interestingly, Daber na ba'aznei ha'am v'yish'alu ish me'esru'ehu v'isha me'esru asa klei kesef u'klei zahav. So the people were instructed. Remember, he's drawing parallels between their preparation for their 3-day journey in the desert and our preparation for our Shabbos Kodesh. The people were instructed. Hashem told Moshe, it's from Parshas Bo, Perek Yudav, please speak in the ears of the nation, and they should ask from their neighbors, klei kesef uklei zahav, take out your finest vessels in preparation for this holy time with God. Furthermore, Parshas Bo, Bnei Yisrael asu kedvar Moshe, the children of Israel did like the words of Moshe, v'yishalami mitzrayim klei kesef uklei zahav usmalos. They asked for valuable silver, valuable gold, reparations, and clothing. And Hashem gave the charm of the people in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they emptied out Egypt. Indeed, Achag LaHashem is dedicated to pure Avodas Hashem. That's a quote. A person must be prepared and bring all he can to the experience of Shabbos. So just like they took clay kesef, clay zahav, usmalos, we must take clay kesef, clay zahav, and so on. It doesn't matter who's coming. It's honoring Shabbos and the Shechina and the Kal, not somebody else. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro. Furthermore, he said, what's another element of Shabbos? So one element we're understanding, they prepared by taking clay kesef, clay zav, and smalos, fine vessels to set the table and clothing. We have to have that aspect. Furthermore, when Paro said, mi v'mi ha-holchim, who and who is going, Moshe said, binu reinu v'ziknenu neilech, b'banenu uvivnosenu, b'tzonenu v'karenu, ki chag la-Hashem lanu. What is another aspect of our preparation for Shabbos? It's a time to sit with generations and to sit with family. Moshe said, we're preparing for the Yontif. We need our youngsters and our elders, our sons and our daughters, because it is a Yontif for Hashem. To serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we must bring all that we possess to the table, both proverbially and literally, on Shabbos. When Shabbos is approached properly, says Rabelsky, every mouthful of food is like a sacrifice on the Mizbech. That's what Moshe says. The Nizbecha LaHashem Elokeinu. So you see all the aspects of preparing and enhancing Shabbos were foreshadowed in the preparation of this Chag LaHashem Mechar that the Jews thought that they were taking in the desert. Setting the table with fine vessels, putting on nice clothing, gathering with family around the table. And the last thing Rabelsky just said is every mouthful of food is like a sacrifice on the Mizbech when we properly sanctify Shabbos. So I was thinking to myself that maybe that's one of the aspects of the Korban Pesach, according to this line of reasoning of Rabelsky, that everything that they were doing to prepare to leave Egypt is a foreshadowing and a teaching of how we should accept Shabbos upon ourselves. So maybe that's the aspect of the Korban Pesach. You roast a beautiful piece of meat, you sit down with your family and your neighbors, and you enjoy the meat. So on the one hand, it's the Korban Pesach celebration, obviously, but through this thesis of his, if you will, it's our understanding that the Korban Pesach represents the Shabbos meal. Klei kesef, klei zahav, smalos, ne'orenu, v'ziknenu, banenu, uvnesenu. What else do you need? You need to sit down at the table and have beautiful food. And furthermore, says Rabelsky, when we stand in Davin and Shul, it's as if we're davening and standing in the Beis HaMikdash. With those who sit in Shul on Shabbos and discuss the sports news and financial markets only realize an opportunity that they ruin with their small talk and idle gossip. If this is your Chag LaHashem, and you spend so much time preparing for it, is it appropriate, he says, to come to Beis Knesset on Shabbos to discuss the sports news and the financial markets? We are fortunate and truly blessed, continuing with Rabelsky, to have been given the opportunity to serve Hashem in this way every single week. Every single week, we get a break. We have a respite from the rat race of the week. And nothing that we're doing, we shouldn't think is about this parach. Because even if the laundry baskets are full the day after you did them, how could it be? I just did them. So that's what Rabbi Zablev said. The Medrash says, Al tikra miskenos leparo, miskenos leparo. You're nebuch, you're working for nothing. You do work, and it looks like you didn't do anything. And you do some work, and it looks like you didn't do anything. So you sweep the floor, and then you have a Sunday dinner, and then why did I even sweep the floor the first time? The floor is full of dirt, and it's full of crabs. Is it about this perch? No, chas v'sham. You're having a building, a home to the Ribono Shel Olam. But we have a respite from our week every single Shabbos. A Jew that is in touch with the holiness of Shabbos, I'm quoting, will sense the anticipation and the excitement hours before its onset. He quotes a pasuk from much later in Sefer Shemos, Parshas Ki Tisa, Shemos Perek Lamed Aleph, Vishamru B'nei Yisrael Sa Shabbos. The children of Israel guarded the Sabbath. This is, of course, once they have left Egypt. What does Vishamru mean? By the way, we've learned this together inside, I think a few years ago. We learned this together inside, if anyone remembers. What does Vishamru mean? I think it was the Aruch Chaim we learned inside. The Shamu is the Torah uses the same expression to describe Yaakov Avinu's reaction to Yosef's dream. The Aviv Shamar as Hadavar, his father guarded the matter. His father not only guarded the matter, his father hoped, anticipated, waited for the matter to come true. The Aviv Shamar as Hadavar, the end of Paraglam at Zion and Bereshis, Yaakov Avinu anticipated when the dream would come true. So what does it mean, Vishamu B'nei Yisrael as Shabbos? It means to anticipate, to wait, to long for the Shabbos. In the words of Rav Belsky, Yaakov Avinu waited with great anticipation for the realization of the dream. In the same way, Vishamu B'nei Yisrael as Shabbos, Klal Yisrael must anticipate the arrival of Shabbos Kodesh. So it's not enough to have the Klei Kesef, Klei Zahav, the Smalos, Ne'ureinu, V'ziknenu, the tasty delicacies on the table. But even Erev Shabbos, we must be anticipating and waiting for the Shabbos. Though we keep and guard Shabbos, says Rebelsky, on the day of Shabbos itself, all of our preparations for Shabbos and our feelings of sweet anticipation for Shabbos are also part of keeping Shabbos. So the anticipation and the preparation, interestingly, is part of keeping Shabbos. We don't usually think of it like that. We think that the anticipation is anticipation, the preparation is the preparation, the keeping is the keeping. No, if you understand what Vishamru really means, then you will understand that the preparation is part of keeping Shabbos. And I don't know about you, but Thursday morning, I'm so happy when I wake up because I say Baruch Hashem, it's Thursday. You already feel like Shabbos is there, but Shabbos is really not there. If you look at the calendar, you have all of Thursday and you have all of Friday, Yom Chamishi and Yom Shishi. So why do you feel like Shabbos is already there when you wake up Thursday morning? It's really not there. But in a sense, it already is coming because through the preparation, you make your menu, you do your shopping, you start to prepare the food. All of that is part of, actually, says Rebelsky, that's part of keeping Shabbos. And it does not only apply to Erev Shabbos, says Rebelsky. For example, when clearing off the Shabbos table, when putting the candlesticks away on Motzei Shabbos, one might take a cloth. And if you wipe the candlesticks and you declare the Kavod Shabbos Kodesh, that too is part of keeping Shabbos. So anything we do during the week to prepare for this Chag LaHashem Machar is part of the anticipation and the Shmir Shabbos. In this way, it's possible to honor Shabbos from the very moment it departs. So if you have in mind, when you clean up from Shabbos, I use this the Kavod Shabbos, I use this the Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. In fact, says Rebelsky, you're honoring Shabbos from the very moment it departs. Whatever a person does to increase and refine his awareness that everything he does is for the honor of Shabbos is praiseworthy. So we must always be working to increase and refine our awareness of preparation for Shabbos, not only the Shabbos itself. Honoring the Shabbos honors he who commanded us in its observance. Honoring Shabbos is honoring the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's interesting that we see Shabbos even before we come to Parshas Yisro, even before it's Parachov Pasuches in Shemos, even before Zachor Yom Shabbos Akadcho, we already had by Mara and Perak Tes Zion, no, Perak Tes Vav, the end of Perak Tes Vav in Shemos, we already have by Mara, Sham Sam Lechok Umishpat, Vesham Niso, the water was bitter, Moshe threw in a stick, Vayim Tekeu Amayim, it becomes sweet. And one of the mitzvahs that we were given that sweetened the bitterness was Shabbos. And even before that, apparently, we see Shabbos because we began this whole shiur by quoting a Medrash, Yalkut Shimoni, in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, where the Medrash says that every Shabbos the Jews would sit and they would read the scrolls of Bereishis. And this gave them the koch to persevere, and this gave them the belief in the redemption. So we see that Shabbos can be imbued throughout the entire week. It's not just one day in isolation. The preparation for Yetzias Mitzrayim is a foreshadowing or a template, better word, for how we must prepare for Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, continuing with Rebelsky, the preparations and the anticipations reach their peak. Great care must be taken to ensure that the atmosphere is one of joy and excitement. So we have now he's going to touch upon something else, which is the way that we behave on Erev Shabbos. Chazal understood the tendency to get caught up in the myriad details of Shabbos preparation and lose sight of the greater goal, and therefore lose proper frame of mind, which relates back to the Avodas Perach. If a woman loses sight of her greater goal, okay? So she thinks that the end goal is the laundry, then you always want the laundry to be perfectly clean. Rav Lef said, they don't take the laundry when the shirt is all white. You hang it in the museum and you say, I did the laundry. She puts it on her kid the next morning and it's dirty gum. So if your end goal is laundry, if your end goal is the actual sweeping, if your end goal is cleaning up the toys, then you're going to be very upset when it doesn't stay pristine like you wanted it. That's not the end goal. You're building a home. So sometimes there's going to be shoes on the floor, and sometimes the clothing will be dirty. Sometimes someone's going to dump over a box of crackers or cereal. It could be your children or your grandchildren, by the way, right after you swept. Now you're going to be angry. But if you see that that end goal is something much greater, then the preparation is not avodas perach, but holy work for the end goal. So too by Shabbos Kodesh. Great care on Erev Shabbos must be taken to ensure the atmosphere should be joy and excitement. We should not be so caught up in the details of the preparation that we lose sight of the greater goal. So if the preparation is a goal in and of itself, and I forget that the goal is Shabbos, and I might become very upset if the preparation gets off schedule or something gets messed up or one of the children doesn't behave or I feel tense because of the time. But if you keep your mind that the goal is Shabbos, the preparation is to get me there. The goal is to build a home. The clean laundry is to get me there. Then you have the proper frame of mind. We are taught in Masechah Shabbos, says Rebelsky. Continuing with Rebelsky, I didn't look up the Gemara. Shabbos, Lamed Dalet Masechah Alf, according to the quote in the Sefer. Gimel Dvarim Tzarich Adam Lomer Besoch Beso Erev Shabbos. Shlosha Dvarim Tzarich Adam Lomer Besoch Beso Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, a person must say three things in his house. Oh, sorry, Im Chashecha, as it grows dark. So what are the three things you have to say? Asartem, did you take Meiser? Aravtem, did you make the Eruv? Hidliku Esaner, don't forget to kindle the lights. This is part of the Shabbos preparation that the Gemara says. Have you taken tithes? Have you given tzedakah? Aravtem, have you made the Eruv? And finally, Hidliku Esaner, kindle the lights. Rabba Bar Barchana, a Maseches Gittin, tells us how to announce these things. So you know how there's an expression, it's not what you say, it's how you say it? So you could nicely say in your home, did you clean up the toys? Did you set the table, etc.? However you want to say it. You could say, did you give ma'aser? Did you set the Erev? Don't forget to light the candles. Or you could bark out the orders. Rabba Bar Bar Chana tells us how we announce these things. Tzarich lemimir rinihu benichusa, from the word like Noach, pleasantly. You must say these things pleasantly. So when we're preparing for Shabbos, if we're barking orders, or screaming, or feeling tense, or not bringing in the feeling of Menucha Shabbos on Erev Shabbos, then we missed the whole point. Then we're focusing on what we're doing not as a goal, but as an end. But if we focus on the goal and bring in the Kedusha Shabbos, the Chag LaHashem Machar, V'nizbechal HaShem Elokeinu, then this is part of the process to get us there. You must say them pleasantly, says the Gemara Masechas Gittin. Quote, says Rebelsky, I'm quoting, and not to bark out orders. That's not my words, that's his words. As an added insight, the Gemara continues, Rav Ashi said, I never heard this Mesorah of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, but I acted according to it as a matter of reason. So along came Rav Ashi, and he said, I never heard this teaching of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, that you should say it pleasantly, but I acted according to it as a matter of reason. Says Rav Belsky, a mensch must know how to act appropriately even without being told. So we have to make sure that when we are busy v'shamu b'nei Yisrael Shabbos, during the preparation stages for Shabbos, the clay kasef, the clay zahav, the swallows, the eating of the meat, when we're all preparing for those things, we're doing it in a manner that is pleasant, so that not only is Shabbos pleasant, but the Shmira Shabbos of pre-Shabbos is also pleasant. Continuing with Rebelsky, part of keeping Shabbos is to ensure that the whole family is, quote, in the ideal state of mind, to enter this holy day fully prepared to absorb the maximum measure of ruchnius that Shabbos can offer. So part of preparing for Shabbos is not only the food and the laundry and the tablecloth and the vessels, but the whole family should be in an ideal state of mind to enter this holy day prepared to absorb the maximum ruchnius that Shabbos offers. Everything should be done with joy. Quote, from washing oneself, who's showering now? Is the bathroom available? He's been in it for so long. Why am I still waiting? They never come out. No. Everything should be done with joy, from washing oneself, going to the mikvah, polishing one's shoes, polishing the silverware, setting the table, to praising the family members for their diligent preparations and gently encouraging them to have everything ready on time. So this too is part of the Shabbos preparation, not only to bring in the Shabbos, but how we prepare and how we bring it in. And then the great moment arrives, says Rebelsky. The wife lights the candles and sheds sweet tears as she prays for the welfare of her family and the entire Jewish people. The husband goes to shul with the sons, and they focus their full attention on the beautiful Shabbos tefillos, the chadodi likras kala. Come, my beloved, lecha dodi, dodi is my beloved, lecha, let us go. Likras kala, let's greet the bride. Pnei Shabbos nekabala, let us greet the face of Shabbos. The return home should be in a state of joyousness. Why did you take so long? Where are you? I'm waiting. The food's going to get cold. No, a state of joy in everything that we do. Not only to perform the actions, but to have the emotion of Simcha on Shabbos. The husband blesses the children and welcomes the accompanying angels with the Shalom Aleichem. Then, he says, the husband takes a special moment to praise and compliment his wife on her diligent preparations as reflected in the Eishes Chayo. Kiddush then ushers in the Holy Seuda. The family sits around the table. Remember, he related this to what? Moshe's request to Paro. Paro says, who's going? And what did Moshe say? B'ni'ureinu uvizikneinu, b'baneinu uvivnosenu, ki chag l'Hashem machar. The whole family, the elders, the youth, the sons, the daughters, sit united around the table, laden with the finest utensils and the tastiest food. Why the finest utensils and tastiest food? Because in Egypt they took clay kesef of clay zahav, and in Egypt they sat down and they ate it, tzli esh, they ate a roasted piece of meat. I don't know, it's probably very delicious. I assume a lamb roasted over fire is probably a very good piece of barbecue. So you sit down with your finest utensils, your tastiest food, your Shabbos clothing, and the family. And that is all reflected in the preparation that they did to leave Egypt with song and words of Torah. The banquet is conducted with an atmosphere of utmost dignity. Truly an altar before Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ne'achal shloshes hamim b'midbar v'nizbecha. We are going 3 days in the desert. We are going to offer sacrifices. Rebelsky say we are conducting, also we are establishing an altar, a mizbech before Hashem. Every person should feel a sense of importance and belonging at the table. It should be a state of serene benevolence, a happy king, a ruler of spirit. Shabbos, Heiliga Shabbos. So I know it's very ideal. And some of you might be thinking, well, that's very nice, but my teenager doesn't want to come to the table. And the 3-year-old's having a tantrum. And the soup just spilled all over the floor. And someone forgot to set the timer properly. And someone else forgot to shut the bedroom lights. And those two kids are fighting. And this one forgot the pressure questions. So Rabelsky is painting an ideal picture of how it should be. And sometimes how it looks in the home is not exactly the ideal picture, but you still have to always remember the goal. Everything that we do is trying to work towards that. And if the aura by the mother, by the father, is one of patience, while those two kids are fighting, and this teenager's there, and the 2-year-old's having a tantrum on the floor, and somebody spilled the soup croutons all over, okay, it's a normal home. We live in a regular home. And as long as it's not avodas perach, but rather it's avodas Hashem, and we can maintain the equilibrium and still bring the sense of simcha and kedusha that we could derive from Shabbos. This perhaps, I want to finish, 2.5 minutes. This perhaps is what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to convey to the Bnei Yisrael. By focusing on the Yom Tov that awaited them in the wilderness, he didn't say, listen, people, we're leaving here and we're going to Eretz Yisrael. He said, we're going to have a Yom Tov in the desert. We must go from here to celebrate a Chag LaHashem. Never mind the other reasons why we must leave Egypt. This is a time to rejoice with God. Never mind that Shabbos gives you rest for the week ahead. Never mind that Shabbos is a respite from the week that came before. This is a time in and of itself to celebrate with God. Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Bnei Yisrael that the Chag itself, the Yom Tov itself, the Shabbos itself, is an opportunity for Avoda in its own right. We have this opportunity, says Rabelsky, every single week, to let the Kedusha of Shabbos permeate our being, so that we come to realize nothing in life has any meaning and nothing in life has any value without it being dedicated to serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. If I know that my goal is not to ensure the laundry is clean and the croutons stay in the container, even though that could also be your goal if you don't want the croutons all over the floor, it's a means to an end. It's a means to connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a means to celebrating Shabbos. It's a means to coming closer to God. It's a means to raising a Jewish home. It's a mean to changing yourself into a person who's an Eved Hashem. Every moment of Shabbos, quote, is an opportunity to dedicate ourselves completely to the honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to absorb unimaginable levels of holiness, and to draw ourselves ever closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every moment of Shabbos. If a person senses that his Shabbos is lacking in some way, You should take time after Shabbos. Interesting. You should analyze it. Work on it. Try and bring out the potential. So if you feel that something is lacking, it's an avodah that should be worked on, which is really thanks to our most generous, committed sponsor and her family, what we're trying to do. Everybody could always improve in avodas Hashem. As long as you're alive, you have room for improvement. Otherwise, you wouldn't be alive anymore. Then Hashem would say, your tafkid's done. You have nothing to improve. If you're here, there's nothing to improve. So no matter how pristine you feel your Shabbos is, there has to be something to prove. Hashem wouldn't give you the avodah for the next week. So Abelsky says, if a person senses his Shabbos is lacking after everything, I have one more paragraph. I'm going to finish. He should take the time after Shabbos to analyze and work on bringing out its potential. It is imperative to learn to experience every Chag Lashem to its fullest. We ourselves are unaware of the spiritual heights we're capable of attaining. We have no idea how close we can draw to Hashem until you put every ounce of energy into anticipating, preparing, and keeping the Holy Shabbos. Anticipating, v'shama b'nei yisrael Shabbos. Preparing for Shabbos. How should you prepare? The Gemara says you should say it with pleasantness. And finally, keeping the Holy Shabbos, that Hashem in His infinite goodness has granted us. It is an eternal inheritance. And this, beyond all other things, is the central, unifying experience of our existence as Hashem's chosen people. I thought it was a tremendously beautiful aspect and approach to Yetzias Mitzrayim. I never saw it before. I'm grateful to Hashem for helping me find this essay. I was really looking at the sefer for a totally different class. And I think it's a beautiful idea that the preparation in the desert, they didn't know that they were going all the way to Eretz Yisrael. But the end goal in and of itself is that experience of that intense moment of Kedusha where we meet a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's an opportunity that we have every single Shabbos when we take out our clay kesef, our clay zahav, our smalos, our banenu uvenenu, our delicious roasted meats. And we sit down and we appreciate the very intense Kedusha that Shabbos affords us. We must anticipate it, prepare for it, and observe it, and then we can tap into its unlimited, infinite potential. So with that, I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and once again, may my husband's grandmother's neshama merit an aliyah, Chana Malka Bas Naftali Allah Hashem, her yurtzeit is today. I wish you a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking the time to join us. Kol tov and good Shabbos to all. Thank you.